is not on the agenda, you have up to 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
And I'm going to ask Andrea to identify the first speaker.
Right, so the first one that had identified herself was Maribel Nunez. Are you there, Maribel? She was on the call before.
She was there.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Maribel?
Yes, hello?
Hi, yes, go ahead, Maribel.
Yes, thank you so much. Sorry, just a little bit back. My name is Maribel Nunez. Director of Inland Equity Partnership, formerly known California Partnership, and also representing Coachella Valley Immigrant Dignity. And the purpose of my public comments is just to kind of share and thank Desert Healthcare District for the support as a partner and also as a funding partner with some of the work that we've been doing on Health for All Young Adults. So just wanted to share some of our rebranding and restructuring within our work, and very excited about the new change. And yeah, we really thank, you know, Desert Healthcare District, and we'll continue our efforts in regards to Health for All, doing some outreach and education on the young adults, and we're continuing some advocacy in regards to expanding it to undocumented elders. And so we, unfortunately, because of COVID-19 and other things, we're not able to move the include undocumented elders, but we're going to continue that fight. And so, yeah, so and in regards to COVID-19, wanted to share that we've been doing a lot of community education and advocacy, letting folks know about COVID-19 services, rental assistance, what Lift to Rise is doing. And I'm thankful that you guys supported Alianza on the rental assistance. And so our job.
Uh-oh. Did we lose her?
We can't do everything. We need to get support from all levels because we're going through some tough times. So we are looking at whenever we see city budget surpluses and stuff like that. But yeah, I just wanted to share some of the work that we're doing and really adjusting to what's happening with COVID-19, having community meetings via Zoom, and definitely look forward to continuing to partner with Desert Healthcare District and the foundation. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Maribel. Next, Andrea.
And the other person that wanted to talk after that was Charles Irving.
You have 3 minutes, Mr. Irving.
I wanted to speak about the CEO line six, so I'll just save my comment.
Okay, very good. Is there any other member of the public that would like to make a public comment on an item that is not on the agenda?
Elizabeth Romero has raised her hand.
Elizabeth?
Yes, hi. Good evening, everyone. My name is Elizabeth Romero, and I'm an Indio resident, also serve on the Riverside County Board of Education, and a former member of the Program Committee for Desert Healthcare District. So I just wanted to introduce myself, one, to the members that I don't have the pleasure of personally knowing, but also wanted to speak on behalf of item number six. It's part of the CEO report. I did glance at the data that's there, and so I won't go over the importance of addressing the very pertinent and important issues that are before us in our communities, especially related to health disparities related to African American communities. And we all know that there is disparate health coverage, chronic health conditions, mental health, and mortality that greatly impact our African-American or Black members of our community. And in light of everything that's been happening, I think this is just such a wonderful step that the district is taking, it building upon years of work that you've had, I think dating back to the early 2000s in addressing and understanding the needs of this community. And so I just wanted to say that I wholeheartedly support and endorse and hope to partner with you, especially from an education standpoint, to work to address these social determinants of health that are really burdening, our healthcare system, but also leading to greater inequality. So just wanted to say thank you for putting forward this very bold plan, and I know it's going to be worked on even more, but it definitely shines light on how well connected the district and responsive the district is to the needs of our community. So just wanted to thank you all for that, and look forward to working with all of you to bring this to fruition.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Andrea, is there another member of the public?
We do. We have Dieter Crawford that would like to speak.
Mr. Crawford?
Hi. Good evening, board and staff. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. My name is Dieter Crawford. I believe you guys pulled the item, but I just heard the last speaker speak on it, so I'll go ahead and speak on it as well. Mm-hmm. The allocation to further advance the district role in addressing the healthcare needs of Black communities in the Coachella Valley. So I'm a clinical community health worker at Desert Clinic Pain Institute. I'm also vice president of the Desert Highland Gateway Estates Community Action Association and a board member of Desert Highland Gateway Health and Wellness Committee. So my family moved to Palm Springs and settled on Section 14, the Agua Caliente Indian Reservation in 1951, and then lived there until we were systematically removed and relocated to the Desert Highland neighborhood, which was unincorporated Riverside County at the time. In those days, Blacks were restricted from owning homes, so that's how we landed on Section 14 and then Desert Highland, because it was unincorporated Riverside County. So the Desert Highland neighborhood is approximately 480 households. It's a single family residence, multifamily residence, and there's also two federally subsidized apartment complexes. There's commercial and industrial properties as well. There's over 50 businesses and nonprofits. There's four churches. The neighborhood is predominantly low income and mostly African American and Hispanic. Black residents have lived here since the 1960s, as I said before, since the Section 14 evictions. And this neighborhood has really been underserved and underrepresented for years due to systematic racism and redlining. And so in 2014, as was mentioned, a community health assessment was conducted with Desert Healthcare District and El Sol Neighborhood Association. And they also worked with trained CHWs from the neighborhood. And the results were pretty shocking. There were high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, high rates of stress, and also unemployment, inadequate income, incarceration, and poor access to healthcare. So the Desert Highland Gateway Estates Committee, Health and Wellness Committee was established to help support the work of the health workers and the community members beyond the place-based initiative. And they have acted as a liaison with the city of Palm Springs and with different other organizations. We've been working in partnership with the city of Palm Springs to create a mobile food pantry with Fine Food Bank. And that comes on the second and fourth Thursday of the month at Desert Highland. We're also working with the city's correct food desert issues in the area. And we successfully advocated to Palm Springs Unified School District for tutoring at James O. Jesse. We also created an African American Parent
Mr.
Advisory
Crawford,
Council.
Can you, I'm gonna ask you to please summarize your.
Okay, and I just wanna say, we believe that the allocation of the funds will further advance the district roles in addressing those needs of the Black community. Once again, my name is Dieter Crawford. Thanks for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is there another member of the public, Andrea?
So Heather Vicona would like to speak, as long as she knows that this is for items that are not listed on the agenda at this time.
Okay, Ms. Vicona, are you speaking on an item that is not on the agenda?
No, sorry, okay. I'll wait until the item.
Okay. Very good. Is there any other member of the public that would like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda?
Andrea, I believe there was a gentleman who wanted to speak on the item number 6 that we just pulled from the agenda.
Sure, Charlie, Mr. Irving, you can certainly provide public comments, although the item has been pulled, if you'd like.
No, it's okay.
Sure. It's not on the agenda, so you're more than welcome to speak.
It's okay. I don't want to take up any more you guys' time.
No. We're here for the public, so that's fine. Thank you very much,
yes.
Though. Okay, stay tuned. Okay, so the next is we have the consent.
Hold on.
There was one more gentleman in the comments. His name was Christopher Montgomery.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Mr. Montgomery, would you like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda?
You have the floor, Mr. Montgomery.
Hi, yes. Good evening. My name is Christopher Montgomery. I am currently a third-year medical student at UCSF, and previously I worked with the Desert Highland Gateway community for around 3 years on working on projects that Dieter Crawford actually discussed. I just wanted to say that item 6 is really an amazing step that the Desert Healthcare District is taking towards actually fulfilling and bringing new steps and changes to the work we're able to put forth. I sent the information to Alejandro, but I have a number of different results, surveys, and posters that were put together to describe all the disparities and difficulties that the community has faced. They've identified so many areas of need and so many areas of strength. And I really just wanted to thank you for putting this on the agenda and making this possible and actually enabling the change and effective steps to actually bring forth a change in this area. Thank you for that.
Thank you very much for your comments. Is there any other member of the public, Andrea?
Let's see. I do not see any others. Okay. No.
Very good. Then we will move on to the next item, which is the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I would like to pull 2 items from the consent agenda for discussion. Okay. It is item 4A and 4E. It is part of the board and staff communication policies.
I also want to pull F. That is 4F. Is there any other item that any board member would like to pull? Okay, can we move forward with the consent agenda, approval of the consent minus A, E, and F? Okay, so we'll first talk about item 4A, policy, purpose and board policies.
On page 9, I would like us to change he/she to they. And my comment is actually the same for 4E. If we can change she/he to they. For many purposes, but inclusivity being.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Vice President Borja, thank you. Any other comments on those items? No? Okay, then I'm gonna ask our attorney, Mr. Scott, if he could speak on item, which is actions and decisions. And this was something that we talked about in our committee meeting, that we learned some information about abstaining. And we wanted to make sure that this information was shared and understood by all the board members. So I will turn to Mr. Scott.
Unmute yourself, Jeff.
Okay, there we go. Am I unmuted?
Yes.
Okay, so under the health and safety code, in order to have a quorum for the to take action, it only takes a majority of the board members in order to establish a quorum. And so therefore, that you start with the idea that 4 directors shall constitute a quorum for the transaction of business. So what that means basically is that in addition, that when there's an abstention from a vote, is you are considered an affirmative vote for actions of a vote in favor of the majority of a quorum. So if, for example, you have 2 members of the quorum out of 4 vote yes, and 1 member votes no, and the other member votes abstains, then under California law, under the Attorney General opinions, and also under the case law, that abstention is considered an affirmative vote. And because the idea, the policy behind that is that if you're against something that's passing by two members out of four, that you need to stand up and basically say, hey, I'm going to vote in opposition. So that way it would then be a 2-2 vote and the motion wouldn't pass. But if you just abstain in that situation, then the majority of whatever the action was is considered the affirmative, or the abstention is considered an affirmative vote. So a 4-2-1 would actually pass the matter, the action. I know it's confusing, but I looked at this very carefully, and this issue that does periodically come up with healthcare districts. And so you can pass an action doing it that way. So have I completely confused everyone?
Any board member has a question or a comment?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't see who that was. I just heard.
Okay, hold on.
Oh, that was you. Okay.
Yes.
Carol, Director Rogers, do you have a question or a comment?
I do. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Hi, all. Hello from beautiful Washington State. My internet antenna is on top of a 50-foot pine tree. Anyway, I know it's tough here. I don't see anywhere in those policies about attendance where it takes into account electronic or telephonic attendance. Is that needed to be there?
No. As what we're operating right now under the governor's order, which allows us to meet via teleconferencing. So for the time being, until that order is rescinded, a quorum is really, it would still be four members that are either Zooming in or calling via teleconference, as long as it's a virtual type of meeting.
Well, I'm just talking about permanently. Should there be something in the policy that allows a member to call in, even though, and count as attendance, even though it's not a quorum?
That's in a different section.
Okay.
And as long as it gets a little complicated, Carol, but basically, if you're in the jurisdiction and you call in, that's, you can be counted as part of the quorum. If you're in Washington, for example, you would not be counted as part of the quorum. Okay, so, but that's basically under, we've incorporated those policies elsewhere, and that code section that allows for teleconferencing. But that Thank we you. Have to defer then to California law and the Brown Act for
Thank
that.
You.
Are there any other board members that have a question or a comment on any of these consent items? Okay, so we have a motion and a second, right, Andrea?
Oh, I did not hear one, unless I missed it.
Is there a motion to move the agenda, the consent agenda?
I move it to be adopted.
Okay. Is Director Zendel moves. Is there a second?
Second, Matthews. Oops.
Director Matthews, second.
Excuse me, vote. President DeLauro, before we move forward, I just want a clarification. Vice President Borja pulled items 4A, 4E, and 4F. There was a change to page 9 of 4A. We discussed 4E, I believe, but I don't recall anyone, or we discussed 4F, but 4E, the basis of authority.
That was to replace the pronouns he and she with they, similar to E to A. So A and E was changing pronouns to
A and E. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So I'll call the vote for passing the consent agenda. Director Shore.
Yes.
Director Zendel.
Yes.
Director Perez Gil.
Yes.
Director Rogers. Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes, it passes unanimously. Moving on to item F, our CEO report. I'll turn it over to our CEO, Conrado.
Thank you, Madam President. The item number one in the CEO report is an update on the LAFCO Municipal Services Review. Given the current health crisis, LAFCO has delayed the schedule for municipal services review, somewhat understanding the demands on the healthcare system right now. The plan for LAFCO is to have an administrative draft to go to their board at the end of this month, and to have a public review draft to be released at the beginning of August.
Any questions from the board on item number one, informational item? Director Shore. Please unmute yourself, Director Shore.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Did they, Conrado, did they give any indication as to when this might return to a normal schedule?
No, they have not.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from the board members on this informational item? Okay, we'll move on to number two. CEO?
The second item is an action item. It's a consideration to appoint the CEO to Lift to Rise Core Leadership Team. On page 167, you will find the letter that was sent to us by Lift to Rise, inviting the district CEO to join the Core Leadership Team of their Connect Capital work. Connect Capital is an initiative that assists Lift the Rise team to attract and deploy funding to advance the community priority of reducing the rent burden in Coachella Valley. This is a work that it's been done in partnership with Riverside County Housing Authority. And it is up for the board to consider whether the CEO should join this effort.
There any questions from the board? Director Zendel.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. Leadership team, I mean, this is something that might be coming back to the board for future funding, because it has come to the board for funding, I understand. And I'm a little concerned about that. And then I guess the other question I have, and this is really for Conrado, is this something that in your portfolio of things you think you should be doing that you think is high enough a priority that you want to commit a certain amount of your time to doing it?
Well, I will defer to our legal counsel on the question of future funding being presented to the district.
Yeah, I think, Conrado, as long as this is a voluntary position that you're not receiving compensation for, then it's okay from a conflict of interest standpoint. I understand Director Zendel's concern, but from a strictly legal perspective, as long as you're not receiving compensation in some fashion, then it's not a conflict of interest.
But if the CEO is bringing a proposal to the board that he and the staff have put forward to do funding for Lift to Rise, specifically this program, is that, it may not be a direct conflict of interest, but is it something that we want to happen? I know, for example, that when I was on the board of something, although I theoretically could vote for something that involved that organization, I tried not to and tried not to say anything. But and I realized I legally I could because I don't receive compensation. But again, I'm not saying I won't vote for this, but I'm just asking these questions and want to make sure that they're thought of ahead of time.
It's a fair question, and it really comes down to the appearance, whether or not that's something that is of concern. But from a strictly legal perspective, as long as he's not being compensated, it's not a legal, doesn't rise to a legal conflict. But I understand the appearance of impropriety or appearance of potential conflict, and I understand that. But that's, but it's not strictly from a legal perspective a conflict.
Okay, Conrado, can you address the second part of Director Zandel's question?
The second part related to the priorities, I believe that one of the key considerations is that if there will be new areas of development in Coachella Valley, those areas of development are going to be closely related to the development of a healthcare infrastructure. New housing needs new healthcare. And I think that's the lens that I would like to bring into this conversation. Whenever there is new areas of development in Coachella Valley, that healthcare access will be one of those points of consideration.
Thank you. Are there any other board members that have questions or comments on this item before I turn it to public comments? Okay, is there any member of the public that would like to address this agenda item?
So Greg Rodriguez had his hand raised first.
Okay. Greg?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, great. Thanks for having me. I think this is a great move for the board to approve Conrado sitting on this core team. I've been involved with the Lift to Rise housing can and other policy initiatives for, oh, I think going on almost 3 years now. And it's really at a precipice right now, especially on the housing part. And Conrado kind of addressed the intersection between health and housing. And we all know housing and secure housing and affordable housing is a social determinant of health. So I think having the CEO of the healthcare district on that core team will be a vital piece. Just to address the funding question, and I get kind of what Les is getting at about the appearance, but in all the other teams, there's six teams through this Connect Capital work across the country. All of those teams have other funders that are included in their core team. And in fact, we do as well within the Lift to Rise core team as well. We have to look at this more as that this initiative is a collective impact approach. And even though there may be financial asks from the district, one, Conrado is not a voting member of the district board, but two, is most of those requests would go to an overall health-centered aspect, again, getting back to the linkage between housing and health. So I would really encourage the board to approve this. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Is there another member of the public that would like to make a comment or question?
Yes, we have Heather, I'm sorry.
Heather, go ahead.
Hi, am I unmuted? I think I am.
Yes.
Thank you. Sure. Yeah, I really wanted to just follow up on Greg's comments to say two things. One is that as we push this work forward, and the work has dozens and dozens of local partners, and there is a core team of folks that include the folks from the county. As we push this work forward, one thing that we recognize, especially in COVID, and the district has really stepped up to support the immediately stabilizing rental assistance work, is that we need to have a really strong and explicit healthcare lens to the housing pipeline as it advances. And we think that a more solidified institutional partnership with the Desert Healthcare District will be really important here. And to follow up what Greg mentioned, there are six national teams that are included in the Center for Community Investment work. And those are the cities of Miami, the city of Seattle, the city of Richmond, the city of Milwaukee, and our rural counterpart is Appalachia. And each of those teams consist of public agency, high-level public agency officials, CBOs, and funders. And so it's also a way, both for us as a group and for the Desert Healthcare District, to sort of expand and multiply really critical relationships.
Thank you, Heather. Is there any other member of the public that would like to make a comment or question at this time?
I do not see any others.
Okay, very good. I will then ask the board. I see the first question from Director Zendel.
I didn't have a question. I just want to make a comment and that thank you for in answering those questions, and I feel very comfortable now voting for this.
Is there any other director that would like to make a question or ask a or make a comment?
I would like to move approval.
There's a first. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Director Perez Gil will second it. I will call for the vote. Director Shore. Director Shore. Director Zendel.
Yes.
Director Perez Gil.
Yes.
Director Rogers. Director Rogers. Okay. She said yes. Right? Director Matthews.
Yes.
Vice President Borja.
Yes.
And myself, I vote yes. Director Shore, I hope
he's— excuse me, if, maybe it's just me, but Director Shore looks like he's in distress, honestly.
I think so, yeah. Can somebody—
Okay,
very good. Thank you. I think that was a good call, Andrea. Director Shore, do you vote yes?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So it passes unanimously. The next item, number three, Conrado.
Item number three, it's a COVID-19 funding update. I added a table on page 228 where you will find three columns. One column shows the funding that the district has approved in response to the COVID-19 outbreak. That totals $2,656,284. On the second column, it shows how much funding the district has leveraged from other funding sources that has come to our community. This is over $16 million. So the total funding that is associated with the board approval of COVID-19 resources has been at nearly $19 million. Any questions?
Any questions from the board?
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Very good. And we see a thumbs up from Vice President Borja. Okay, moving on to the next one is number four, Conrado.
The community health needs assessment and the health improvement plan is an item that the board approved a few months ago. We selected HARC to conduct this work for the district. One of the key aspects of the community health needs assessment is community engagement. We want to effectively engage our community, hear their voices, elevate their priorities, to have our funding stream being responsive to the needs of the community and to be strategic in how we allocate resources. With the outbreak of COVID-19, it has become almost impossible to have that level of community engagement. So we have asked that HARC delays a little bit the process to the fall to allow for a meaningful and intense community engagement. I believe that is going to only benefit the work that we are doing, and it's going to help us hear the voices of our community, elevate their priorities, and to have a more responsive community health needs assessment. In the meantime, the summer months will focus on completing the secondary data component of the needs assessment. We have received the first draft of the secondary data report on June 17, and our team is reviewing and working with HARC to make sure that this is very well developed and that it's going to be a meaningful tool to inform our community on health indicators that exist in Coachella Valley.
Thank you. Is there any director that would like to make a comment or question? Director Zendel.
I certainly understand the delay. The problem is we don't know how long this is going to go on for, and it's conceivable that it could go on through the end of the year. So I would suggest that you work with HARC for a contingency to do something different to come up with the information you need. I delaying a couple, 3 months is not a big deal, but if it turns out that we're gonna delay 6 months, I think that is a big deal. And we need to come up with some other kind of way to move forward. That's my suggestion.
Thank you, Director Zendo. Is there any other director that would like to make a question or a comment? Director Matthews, I can't see you, so I'm gonna assume that
can you hear me?
I can hear you, but I can see your printer very well.
Oh, I reversed that again. I don't know.
Okay.
I'll go to work on it.
Okay, so that's an information item. We'll move on to the next item. Okay, so next one is general election.
Yes, and there is a notice of election on page 230. As the elections are fast approaching, we have received an election calendar from the registrar's office. July 1st is the deadline for the district secretary to deliver a notice of election and boundary certification. This, we prepared that notice for the district, and it's on page 230. If you agree with the information that it's there, we will move forward and submit that to the registrar of voters.
Okay, is there any questions from any board members or comments? Okay, Director Zendo.
I don't think you're allowed to use MD after my name on the voter registration thing. Or is that how it came?
So this is a notice to let them know, I mean, if you'd like me to remove MD behind it, that's fine. I did not receive instructions indicating that, but we can certainly remove it if you like.
Well, if they'll accept it, it's fine. But generally, the voter, the registrar is very strict on the names that can be used. But maybe on this, it doesn't make any difference.
I think the main thing to note is that the district does not pay for the candidate statements. That is done by the candidate. And this year, the fees are approximately $700.
How much?
If you choose to have a candidate statement. Obviously, you don't have to do that, but it helps the chances for winning the election.
Can you repeat that amount? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
The estimated amount is $700. So when you submit your materials, you submit your check or money order, however you like to pay, along with your candidate statement that goes with that.
And you made a one other question about the boundaries. Do you have a formal schedule of the boundaries of each district?
A formal schedule of the boundaries of each
boundaries. District.
We have an election calendar.
I thought I heard somebody say that they would. I thought I heard Conrado say that something about the boundaries for each district within
the map.
That is a map that has the different zones.
But does it outline the literal boundaries? Because the maps that we have approved, are color-coded, but they do not outline the street names.
Jeff, you're muted.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Yeah, they should call the registrar voters with their address where they live, and the registrar can tell them if they're in the boundaries or not.
Thank you, Jeff. And Director Shores, do you have another clarify?
Excuse me, that didn't address my concern. I was looking at it from my perspective, not an individual resident's perspective, to understand exactly what streets were the boundaries of the district that I represent.
But if you call the register a voter and you give him your address, they'll tell you whether you're in the district. That's what Jeff is saying.
That's all I'm talking about. I'm trying to understand
actually
where the boundaries end for each district related to me.
Okay,
Will can help you go onto the computer and find the right place to expand it and see exactly what the streets are and things like that.
NDC map that's online is very detailed as well, Arthur, and I can help you with that map if you need that.
I do need your help. Thank you.
Okay. Director Zendo, you still asking questions?
Yeah, I just want to say Greg Rodriguez, who works for the county, so he must know, said that it's okay on this document. It's just on the ballot.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Did you have any other questions, Director Zindel?
Nope.
Okay, any other board member that has a question or a comment on this item?
Then President Blair, just one other clarification that the Riverside County Registrar of Voters is open now, but you have to have an appointment to see someone for your business. They really, really, they think you should have an appointment, but if you show up, they'll certainly help you, but they really encourage that you have an appointment.
Okay, thank you. Is Director Zindel?
So, Andrea, will you be giving us information and the public information about how to come to the district office to register and to do all these things?
We will. If you notice on the election calendar, between July 6th and August the 5th, we will publish a notice of election. During that time, we will also have all the materials together, and there will be instructions for candidates. They can make appointments with myself, since the district isn't open at the moment, in order to obtain the election materials, or as I mentioned, they can call the Registrar of Voters office and make an appointment with them to obtain those materials as well.
But all the swearing in and everything can be done at the district office, correct?
With a limited number of people. I don't see, Jeff, why we can't do that via Zoom for a swearing in.
Well, we're going to wait until December, and we'll address it after the first Friday at noon on December.
I'm talking about when you put your name on the ballot, you have to you have to sign something and do something. I'm talking about that.
Right. So again, it's by appointment only. So once you contact myself to make your appointment, I will meet the individual at the district, and we will go over the materials and have a swearing in of those materials during that time.
Okay, I was just confirming that you don't have to go to Riverside.
It's not unless you want to, no. Unless you want to take that drive, no, you don't. You can do everything with myself.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any other board member that has a question or a comment on this particular item?
One other, just point of clarification, Andrea, could you, what was the earliest date for those appointments?
So the date is July the 13th that the registrar will email me all the documents.
So anything after July 13th is open for your consideration. Thank
that
you.
That is correct.
Thank you. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak on this item? Andrea?
All right, gosh, I got a lot of things going on here.
I'm sorry.
Carol's asking, what is the deadline to apply? Well, the county, Carol, does not distribute the materials until July the 13th, but the election calendar also, once again, that was distributed to board members. I believe August the 5th is the deadline. Oh, August the 7th is the last day.
Okay. Is there any other questions from the public or desire to speak?
No hands are raised.
Okay, so let's, is there a motion to approve number 5?
So moved.
Director Shore moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay.
Director Perez Gill seconded. I'm going to call for the vote. Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zindel?
Yes.
Director Perez Gill?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And myself, yes. Next item is number 6. Actually, we pulled that one, so disregard. The next one is number 7.
Item number 7 is on page 233 of the packet. It is related to the Desert Hot Spring Health and Wellness Foundation. This is in essence the dissolution of that foundation, which at this point had fulfilled its mission and had no assets and no liabilities.
Okay. Is there any questions or comments from any board members? Okay, I see no questions or comments, no hands. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak on that? Hearing none.
It's just informational.
Just information, but I just wanted to make sure there was no comment. So next item is G, Desert Regional Medical Center CEO report. Michelle Finney.
Hi, good evening. I just want to give you a quick update. I think as many of you have had opportunity to hear on the news and read about, We are seeing a rise in our number of COVID positive patients that we're caring for. I had shared with you in May, our average daily census of COVID patients ran about 20 ADC, which represented a little bit less than 10% of our overall inpatient census. So far this month, our average daily census has been running a little over 38 ADC. We did hit a peak actually on Sunday where we had 57 positive and PUI patients under care. That still represents a relatively low percentage of the patients that we are providing care to. So that would represent about 12% of our inpatient census. The same patterns that I just described for you at Desert are the patterns that we are seeing at JFK as well. I was going to report to you that the only service that we have not reopened is our inpatient pediatric service, and we have been working with our medical staff and have intent to reopen to inpatient pediatrics on July 6th. We still are looking to accomplish that reopening date. However, I will caution that if we continue to see a steady increase over time, that may change. I mean, I will tell you that as healthcare workers, I mean, we've been very appreciative of the actions that have been taken to try to reduce the spread, because that has given us some ample time in order to prepare our facilities for providing care in this arena where we have our separation of our COVID and non-COVID population. A couple of other things to bring you up to date on. We are completing our emergency room department renovation, or at least the expansion component of it. I'm very excited to get that open. We have some state inspections taking place tomorrow, and we'll make whatever adjustments are requested of us and should be opening that enhanced capability very, very shortly. After we open the new area, we will then be systematically going through the I'll just call it ED proper, and we'll be upgrading most of the finishes to get a uniformed look between the ED proper and the upgraded area. And then the last item I wanted to note for you is we did receive our approval from the Family Medicine Regional Review Board for our insourcing the family medicine program under DRMC sponsorship. We actually increased the number of resident slots from 24 to 30, and we did fully fill our first 2 years of residents, the PGY1 and the PGY2. They're onboarding as we speak, and they start their academic training the 1st of July.
Thank you, Michelle. Is there any board member that would like to make a comment or question? Director Shore.
Michelle, are you seeing any specific hotspots or contact tracing that's leading you to a focused area for the outbreaks, the increase in the volume, I should say?
You know, we do keep track of the zip codes, and I will tell you right now, it's what I refer to as a potpourri. We have some patients in-house from Imperial. We have some from Blythe. We've actually received some individuals through our trauma runs, which is a very large catchment that would be considered outside our service area. I would say right now about a third of the cases are from skilled nursing facilities that we're receiving, and we did start to see some uptick in the Cathedral individuals with zip codes out of Cathedral City and Desert Hot Springs. That seems to have leveled a bit.
Thank you.
So it's a little of this and a little of that.
Thank you.
You, Director Zindel.
Michelle, I think this is what you were referring to, but I want to double check. if a patient has an automobile accident and is brought to Desert for trauma care, and of course you probably do a COVID test on them and they test positive, it's an admission, but it's also a COVID admission, even though that's not the reason they came to the hospital, correct?
It would still be counted as a positive COVID care patient.
Right, so as you've opened up more services to sort of, I'll say, elective procedures and things like that, there may actually be patients that would not normally have come to the hospital for what they were gonna, that what they're having, but because they were in the hospital, had a test, and it was positive, it counts as a COVID case. On the other hand, it should be noted that the census that most of the hospitals in Riverside County is significantly up. So it's a combination of people probably getting things that were pent up a little bit, and some of it is increased COVID-19.
Is there any other board member?
Somebody could be arriving to the hospital with a cardiac condition, and we would do a test, and we would count them in these numbers if that test came back positive COVID. Because we do need to segregate that individual from the rest of the patient population.
Any other board member has a question or a comment? Okay, I have a question. Are you seeing any progress in the treatment in people that are recovering? You mentioned that there was 57 right now. I know that in the beginning there seemed to be a lot of confusion about what's the treatment plan, and there was just kind of like so many things that were unknowns. Has that gotten better, that there is more experience that is actually increasing the likelihood that people will get better instead of staying in the hospital for a month and so forth?
So one of the interesting things is, although the actual positivity rate and the hospitalization rate right now is a little bit up, the death rate is not. Whether I could tell you that there's a secret sauce treatment plan, I don't think I can. A lot of the physicians have been using, and I'm drawing a blank on the name, it's the blood product reinfusion of someone who has antibodies. Mm-hmm. They're also using the Ritonavir treatment protocol, so there's different options that are available. Really the most challenging population, and fortunately that has stayed relatively low, are individuals who require intubation, and those individuals do tend to have a pretty long course.
Okay, thank you, Michelle, appreciate it. Okay. Is there any questions from any board members, comments? I can't see Director Matthews, so I'm assuming there is.
No, I would let you know. I would just add that from what I've heard, your staff has done a terrific job during a very difficult time.
Thank you.
It's when I counted the number of months, it's time has passed by.
Yeah.
Okay, next item on the agenda is the program committee, and I'll turn it over to our chair of that committee, Director Perez Gill.
Okay, the meeting minutes of the June program committee meeting included in the packet for review provides an overview of funding requests to date. The minutes appear starting on page 234. Routine items are listed on the grant payment schedule, and COVID-19 funded organizations are included in the schedule as provided in Conrado's CEO report. Donna Craig, Chief Program Officer, will introduce a consideration to approve UCR's proposal to provide COVID-19 testing and health education for farm workers in the Eastern Coachella Valley communities. This proposal was discussed at our program committee, and which we recommend for approval by the board.
Before we get to number five, is there any questions or comments from any board members on items 1 through 4? Okay, very good. Then we'll turn it over to Donna for number five.
Yes, good evening. Thank you very much. As Director Perez-Gill very succinctly mentioned, this is a grant before us. It's a 5-month grant for $149,976 to help reduce the spread of coronavirus with the farm worker community. And you can see in the staff report the various things that they are going to do. They're going to have pop-up COVID testing sites. They are going to disseminate information. They're going to spread. They're going to be utilizing upcoming healthcare workforce with residents and medical students, and also working with promotores. And I believe Dr. Cheney and Dr. Mark Dubay is on the phone if you had any other questions, but the program committee did recommend a full recommendation and approval to the board.
Thank you, Donna. Mm-hmm. Is there any questions from the board members at this time before I turn it over to public comments? Okay, I'll come back to you. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak at this time? Dr. Cheney, I think she was there.
Diane Vines raised her hand. Is she a part of the collaboration, Donna?
No.
Okay. Maybe Diane Vines? Diane, go ahead.
But she's not part of it. Our hand is raised.
Diane, could you unmute yourself, please?
Yes. I'm speaking on behalf of the CSUSB nursing students and the nursing program. We are very much in support of this proposal, and we hope that these nursing students will be able to also work with the testing and the public education.
Thank you. And Cheney?
Yes. Hi, I'm here. Thank you very much. So I just want to say we're really excited about this proposal, and absolutely we would love to be able to collaborate with other students in the Valley. And we consider this to be very much a collaborative effort to really address the needs of the of COVID-19 among farm workers in the Eastern Coachella Valley specifically, and not only farm workers, but their families and the communities within which they're embedded.
Thank you. Is there any other public comments, Andrea?
Let's see, Greg Rodriguez.
Greg?
Yeah, thank you. I want to address Director Shore's previous comment about targeted populations, and this is one of our major targeted populations. Supervisors have been working really hard to get the county to focus on this. We're actually implementing mobile testing, but this will just augment that, and so I would really encourage approval for this. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Is there any other member of the public?
Diane has her hand raised again. Did you have something to say, Diane?
No. I'm lowering my hand.
Okay. Are we good, Andrea?
Yes, we are good. Unless Anne has something else to say.
Yeah.
Okay, Anne, go ahead.
Thank you. I just also want to share, so Dr. Dubay is also on the if he has anything to add, but we've been in really close communication with County Public Health, very supportive of this, and so we know that we have that partnership as well as other partnerships in the Eastern Coachella Valley, growers, and obviously with Diane and others. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you, Anne. Okay, board members, any questions or comments at this time? Please raise your hand. Is there a motion to move this item?
Motion to approve.
I'll second it.
Vice President Borja moves for approval and Director Matthews seconds it. I'll call for the questions. Is Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zindel?
Yes.
Director Perez-Gill?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
Myself, yes. It passes unanimously. The next item is to do number 2, Finance, Legal, Administration, and Real Estate Committee. I'll turn it over to the chair of that committee, Director Matthews.
Mostly enclosed are the minutes from the meeting, and that's all I have. There are no action items.
There is an action item number two, service agreement addendum, Roush Communications.
Consultant. Oh, the Roush Communications, that is mine. Thank you very much. That's the agreement to work with staff and board on communication issues and things. Conrado, do you want to add anything to that?
Sure. I think this is an important item to assist the board with board development, having retreats and meetings that will help us work more closely together. And this is something that we started, and I think we should continue.
Good.
Thank you. Is there any questions from any board members?
So moved to accept.
Is there a second?
Second.
Director Shore seconds. Is there any questions from any board members? Comments from any board members? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to call for the vote. Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zendel?
Yes.
Director Perez-Gill?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And myself, yes. It passes unanimously. Thank you. The next item on the agenda, I forgot to ask, is there any public comment on that item? I'm sorry, I apologize. There is not. Okay, very good. Okay, the next item is number three, board and staff and communications policy. This is myself as the chair of that committee, and we have minutes for that committee and nothing else. I hope you will look at that to see what our last meeting was, June 17th. If there's no, we'll move on to the next item of old business, Coachella Valley Association of Governments CVAG CV link update. Our CEO, it's an informational item.
Yes, it is an information item. It's on page 294. I think to highlight, it is important that there is a new mile that was completed, and there is a plan to develop another 20 miles in 2020. No pun intended.
20 miles in 2020. Wow, that's a good. That's a good chunk of walking and biking. Is there any questions or comments from any board members on this item? Okay, seeing none.
Somewhere in here.
I'm going to move on to the next item of new business. I'm sorry, Vice President Borja.
It's me. Somewhere on here, this letter from Mr. Kirk does say that we've seen like an increase of people walking in our communities due to COVID. Definitely very true in my community. It's like very nice to see people walking out and about. I think the heat kind of changes some of that. I've seen less people walking out and about, but I think it's really great. We have some trails here in Indio, and when the weather was nice, I haven't gone since the weather got hotter, but when the weather was nice, there was literally packs of people with their dogs and everything else. So it's always really nice to just see people in the Coachella Valley, like outside using our sidewalks, bike trails, hiking trails, right? All of it. So I appreciate that they like also noticed it and included it on here for us.
Very good. Thank you for sharing, Vice.
We have a public comment, please, from Erica Felci.
Erica, yes, you have the floor.
Sorry, Chair, I apologize for the delay. Erica Felci, I'm the Governmental Projects Manager with CVAG. I just wanted to express our appreciation for the district's continued support, particularly staff, as we work through the contract, and we look forward to seeing you at our groundbreaking for 20 miles in 2020. And Conrado, you best believe we worked really hard to get to 20 miles in 2020 because it sounded so much better when we said it than 13 miles or 7 miles, which were our original estimates for this year. So we're extremely excited. We're extremely appreciative. And the vice chair mentioned, I too live near CV Link. I live near CV Link in DeMuth Park, and I've seen certainly an uptick in this pandemic. I think many families like mine who are stuck at home and struggling to figure out what to do all day, one of the things that we can really promote is healthy lifestyles. And so it's good to see people out with their masks, walking and running. So thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Yeah. Is there any other questions or comments from any board members? Okay, I'm seeing no. So we're going to move on to the next item of new business. Report of the closed session on June 19th. I'll turn it over to our attorney, Jeff.
Really nothing other than that what was reported in the minutes after the closed session, that the board is continuing to evaluate the chief executive officer.
And just an FYI, that was a separate meeting because we wanted to make sure we dedicated the amount of time to do it right. And sometimes our meetings tend to run a little bit long, and we did not want to have a meeting till midnight. So that was necessary. Okay, thank you, Jeff. Is there any questions on that item before I move to the next item? Seeing none. We have legal. Back to Jeff.
Yeah, I had was kind of waiting for to put anything in the board packet to see what they came up with in Sacramento. And finally, yesterday, it was announced that the governor and legislature has agreed to a deal on the budget. And as I noted, I think in prior reports, the main difference was how to account for the money expected to receive from the federal government to address the impact of COVID. And they were both sides, both the legislature and the governor, were estimating that amount to be approximately $14 million. And the governor's version in his May update was that he felt that the cuts should take place on July 1st. And once the money was received, those cuts could be adjusted. The legislature didn't feel the same way and was a little more optimistic and said, look, we'll plan on the $14 billion. And if there's a discrepancy, then we're going to take into the account the cuts on October 1st. So the compromise was to make the adjustments to the budgets passed on June 15th, incorporated both approaches. Some cuts were avoided and others will take place on July 1st. If funds are received from the government by October, from the feds by the 15th in October, they will restore some of those cuts on a pro-rata basis. And the important news was that there were no cuts in the healthcare area that are tied to receiving federal funds. So looking at the healthcare budget, a significant portion of the funds has been used with the tobacco taxes to supplement Medi-Cal reimbursements. And the government proposed to eliminate this program and use the funds for overall Medi-Cal program. The compromise was to suspend this program for 2021-22 year if certain economic conditions exist, and this program is saved for this budget year. Also, Medicare managed care capitated rates are reduced 1.5% going back to July 2019 and may continue beyond 2021. The proposal to expand Medi-Cal to cover adult undocumented individuals is not included in the budget, but is prioritized for future budgets if a portion of the state's reserve funds are available. Also, they restored all Medi-Cal optional benefits that were proposed to be eliminated in the May revise, including dental, optometry, optician, optical labs, et cetera. And then finally, the program approved in the 2019-20 budget for $20 million to place alcohol and drug counselors in emergency departments will remain in place with no cuts. And the proposal to assist with cost of hearing aids and related services for children without health insurance coverage in low income households will remain in the budget. So there you go.
Thank you. Is there any board member that has any questions or comments of our attorney? I don't see any hands. Nothing from Carol or Mark, or I can't see, but I'm sure they would have spoken up. So we'll move on to the next item of immediate issues and comments. Is there any board member that would like to report on an immediate issue and comment?
I would, this is Mark. I would like us
to start with Mark, and then we'll move on to Carol, to our following Well, Mark?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought no one was going to speak, but mostly I was going to say is I think we ought to adjourn the meeting in honor of Dr. Frank Kirkley, trauma surgeon.
We will definitely do that. Thank you, Director Matthews. Director Zendel.
I just wanted to say that I just wanted to make a comment about taking the agenda item six, whatever it was, off agenda. I think all of us are very much concerned about the disparity of healthcare in the African-American Black community and want to see us work on that and dedicate some effort and money to that. I think we need to be careful that we do it knowing the history that's happened in the past with the district and that neighborhood and other Black neighborhoods in the Coachella Valley, and also listen to what the needs are from those communities come up with a good plan that has our staff working on it and our committees, and have it come back to the board with lots of information that we can digest, and maybe even a study session, because it is a very complicated and really troublesome issue that needs some big attention. And so I just wanted to make sure that anyone listening didn't think that somehow we weren't concerned about this, because I can't speak for everybody else, but I presume that we all are. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Director Zendel. Vice President Borja.
Hi, everyone. I would like us to start considering some communication or something or other around the census. I don't believe I've seen any, I may be very wrong, but we have the highest community, the highest incorporated city in the Coachella Valley with census rates is Cathedral City with 56%. And Desert Hot Springs with 54%, and every other city in the Coachella Valley is under that. I think we all understand that the census has big, big ties to Medicare, Medi-Cal. So the more time we spend maybe not talking about it, the less time people spend filling it out. So I would encourage everyone who's still on the call to take their census at my2020census.org. And then I would also encourage the Desert Healthcare District to start moving some communication around the census as it relates to people's healthcare. The other side to this is the funding that has been coming down through CARES Act and other acts from the federal government. Those funds are designated to communities based on census counts. So this money really is incredibly important for our communities, that because of that, the census is very important to our communities.
Yes, thank you, Vice President Borja. I was trying to think back when it came up earlier and somebody kind of touched on it a little bit. I thought, wait a minute, we're already in June, and you know, where are we with the census and coming back and counting the people that didn't do it? So yeah, thank you very much for commenting on that. That's very important work, and that will stay with us for a whole decade. So yes, Director Rogers.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to Dr. Zendel's remarks about our work with our Black communities, and want to support staff in the endeavors that they may come up with in terms of how the district might play a part in helping the health disparities of this area. Also, I reported to President DeLara that I'm a member of the Lift to Rise core leadership team on the Housing CAN with Greg Rodriguez, a policy opportunity group. And we're looking at long-term unit production goals for Coachella Valley. And I would like to be acknowledged as a district representative on that committee.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for volunteering to serve on that committee, Director Rogers. It's something that's very important to lend our voice to this community effort. So yes, I will officially appoint you as a Desert Healthcare District rep on that committee. Okay. And is there any other board member that would like to have a comment or a question at this point? If not, I'm going to adjourn this meeting at 6:58, and we will move right into our foundation meeting. So, foundation meeting, we will call the meeting to order at 6:58, and roll call.
Director Shore?
Present.
Director Zindel?
Here.
Director Perezkiel?
Here.
Director Rogers?
Here.
Director Matthews?
Here.
Vice President Borja?
Here.
And President Zindel. President DeLara, excuse me.
Here, thank you, Andrea. The next item is approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to approve.
A second.
Okay, and we have our CEO that would, before we take action on it, I'm going to call on our CEO.
Yes, thank you. I need to make a change on the agenda, which is I'm asking to remove item number one, E1, the CEO report. We had considered that this allocation was coming to the foundation, so we need to remove this item.
Thank you. Is that okay with the maker of the motion that we remove that item?
Yes.
And the second? Okay, very good. So I will call for the vote. But Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zindel?
Yes.
Director Perez-Gil?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes. We will move on to public comment. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda? You have 3 minutes to speak at this time. If you could identify yourself, please.
Go ahead.
Hello, hi, if everyone can hear me. My name is Grace Garner. I'm a city council member for the city of Palm Springs in District 1. District 1 is our majority-minority district in Palm Springs. And I wanted to, I initially came on to speak about something that was on the agenda, but since it's been removed, I still want to make a comment about it, because I think it's really important that we are supporting our Black residents and that we're supporting communities of color generally in the work that we do. And something that I think that the possibility of providing funding to support the Black community is really important right now. I know at the city of Palm Springs, we're working really hard to address issues of inequality, specifically racial inequality. And we're now kind of starting on this new front and on how to do that. And I would love to be able to partner with other organizations that are doing this kind of work. And I really do encourage you all to do that. I know that there's a health needs assessment that's being wrapped up and other things that are already going to be able to support this kind of work. So I just really urge you to take this very seriously and to have it back on the agenda very soon for discussion. And I think that this is something that I would love to bring to my colleagues at the city and make sure that we could offer support. You know, one of the things that we're missing is a grocery store in that neighborhood. And Indian Canyon is a perfect place for that. And being able to partner with healthcare and being able to have a community center and a healthcare center and a grocery store, all of these things connect and make sense. So I just really hope that this will come back soon to all of you. And I'm also willing to speak with anyone on the board who wants to discuss this further and figure out how the city can best partner with you all. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public that would like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, Andrea?
Or no other hands raised.
Very good. Okay, we will move on to the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second by Director Rogers. I'll call for the vote. Director Shore?
Yes.
Director Zindel?
Yes.
Director Perez-Gil?
Yes.
Director Rogers?
Yes.
Director Matthews?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And myself votes yes, passes. We will move on to number item E, to our CEO report on number two.
Thank you, Madam President. The addressing environmental health issues in Eastern Coachella Valley is an item that we approved back in the fall. We hired a consultant, Concord Incorporated, as two principals, Scott McCrary and David Howard. They have been moving forward despite of the challenges imposed by COVID-19. They have been making progress on stakeholder interviews, including the Torres Martinez Sovereign Tribal Nation, the South Coast Air Quality Management District, the California EPA. As reported, they have they are uncovering complex issues of land ownership on a 2,400 acre land. The tribal response, learning that there is only one person that monitors the quality of the environment in that region. And they're working on a paper which is summarizing some of these findings. They're looking at data to showcase the stark contrast between the environmental conditions of the area and other areas in Coachella Valley. They're characterizing their work, gathering all this background information and working with a number of stakeholders to bring them together and have a convening as soon as it is possible. So that's the report and that work.
Are there any questions from the board members? Vice President Borja.
Remind me, I should have gone back and looked at what we approved and I completely didn't, so apologize. But can you remind me if there was any community input? And is it similar to what's going on with the needs assessment? They're just going to have to push it back to whenever possible?
Yeah.
Okay.
There any other questions or comments from any board members on this item? Hearing none, seeing no hands, I will move on to the next item is our program committee. I'll turn it over to our chair, Director Perez-Gill.
Yes, the meeting minutes of the June program committee are included in the packet for review. They start on page 17. It provides an overview of the homeless initiative and challenges with the county funding this year. With the county funding this year's cooling centers. The committee discussed the $300 allocation for future approved grants of the district-wide funding as opposed to separate funding of the West and East. Other topics that we discussed included a proposed legislation regarding employee family leave, AB 3216, and the environmental health in the Coachella Valley, which the CEO reported on previously, and the funding allocation to address homelessness, which the CEO will report on shortly.
Thank you. Are there any questions on this item? Director Rogers?
On page 19, under adjournment, it needs to needs to change to say Chair Yvette Perez-Gill adjourned the meeting.
Thank you for catching that, Director Rogers. Is there any other questions or comments? Okay, seeing no hands, I will then move on to the next item, Finance, Legal, Administration, and Real Estate Committee. To that chair of that committee is Director Matthews.
Yeah, the minutes for the meeting of June 9th are enclosed and they speak for themselves.
Any other questions of the chair for that committee? Seeing no hands from any board members, going to move it to the next item, our homelessness initiative. That's item G. I'll turn it over to our CEO.
Thank you. The homelessness initiative is something that it started by the district back in May of 2016. The board approved $2 million allocation for homelessness, a collective fund that is, and challenged the 9 desert cities to match the district efforts and allocations. In 2019, the board approved another $1 million to the collective fund, bringing a total of $3 million. At the May 2020, the board also allocated an additional $500,000 to the homelessness fund. And we have currently about $1.2 million in that homelessness collective fund. And the staff and CBAG, which is managing the efforts through CBHeart, is working to promote a collective approach and a regional approach so that we are addressing homelessness not in isolation or by independent cities or efforts that are not coordinated. So we have included in the board packet, which starts on page 24, a summary of the activities and some of the things that have happened and some of the challenges that we are facing at this time. Any questions? And I believe Greg Rodriguez is also on the line. So if you have questions, he's also
I'm going to first ask Greg if he can make his comments, and then I will ask board members if they have questions or comments. Greg, did you want to add
something? Yeah, just a couple. Sure, just a couple comments. And thanks to the district staff for taking what I wrote and making it look a lot better. I just want to address a couple things as far as some of you may know, we went through budget hearings over the last 2 weeks. And unfortunately, my boss, Supervisor Perez, really tried to advocate for a flattening of public service dollar or public safety dollars to the sheriff and DA, increasing allocations to DPSS, primarily to for homeless services. Unfortunately, that was voted down today. So those are going to be some challenges as far as the county budget goes. I will say, though, that our Office of Housing, Homelessness Solutions, and Workforce Development has been very aggressive in going after CARES dollars, as well as the traditional HAP funding and other sources coming from the state. So we should still see a flow of resources. I will put a caveat on that, though, is that as many of you, as most of you should know, the $10 million allocation, direct allocation that was done by the state through Assemblyman Chad Mays is really affecting how the rest of the county looks at allocating more money to the valley. So I'm trying to get over some of that politics, for lack of a better word, but just I want that caveat in there. Outside of that is pretty much everything is in here where we are up to date. We actually are embarking on some an initiative that I kind of launched last week. I had had initial conversations a few months back ago with the Behavioral Health Department about acquisition of a property in Palm Springs. It's the Travel Lodge location on South Palm Canyon for a more permanent supportive type housing, primarily for behavioral health clients. Due to the cost of that and what it would take for TIs and operations, that project fell through. However, the governor has announced a program with CARES Act funding for allocations of or acquisitions of hotel motel properties. So we have pulled together a pretty a committee within our office, as well as County Behavioral Health, the Housing Homelessness Solutions and Workforce Development Department, the Housing Authority, for initial conversation and behavioral health, excuse me, for conversations on actually purchasing that property and actually creating a campus type environment. If you remember back and hearken to the report I finished at the end of last year, and this goes to Conrado's comments about working in collaboration and collaborative approaches. And this is not just approaches amongst service providers or organizations, but it's really how do we collaboratively deal with the homeless situation. So we're looking at that property that not only has 145 rooms that we would utilize for crisis stabilization units or transitional housing, for permanent supportive housing, for affordable housing, but the property also has two restaurants on it. One could be utilized as an access center as well as an emergency shelter, as a feeding center into the transitional housing and permanent supportive housing, obviously with office space for case management, wraparound services, et cetera. The other one we envision we could actually utilize as a workforce development and actually open a restaurant there. providing not only jobs for people that are on site there, but actually opening it to the public as a possible revenue source. These are all very initial thoughts. We're going through funding requirements. We're dealing with programming. I'm working right now on a complete schematic of how we'll move through this in phases. So those are kind of the major updates. And again, happy to answer any questions on any of the stuff that was in the staff report.
Thank you, Greg. Is there any questions from board members? I have a hand up from Director Zendel first, and then I'll turn to Director Rogers.
Yeah, it's going to be 107 degrees tomorrow night. What's going on with the cooling centers?
So we still have the one open in Palm Springs at the high school. I was notified about 3 weeks ago that we had to be out of there by June 30th. So I am scrambling to find a location. What has happened here, in all honesty, is as you all know, we ran this program last year in the three cities. They ended September 30th. Palm Springs decided to continue the operations in Palm Springs at the boxing club. And they were funding those operations. When the pandemic set in, I sought to move that operations to the high school gym for social distancing issues or for social distancing reasons. And then I was also able to access funding from the county to operate that. So at this point now, and especially with the budget, and I don't know if Grace is still on the phone, but especially with Palm Springs budget, all of this now is basically, I am now a shelter operator, is how I feel. But I am trying to secure a location. I looked at a location today that was not going to work. But I'm confident that we can continue that. The issue here is I can find locations in the other two cities, in Cathedral City and Desert Hot Springs. It all comes down to funding. And the county does not have, I just went through our whole budget things. We're facing a $100 million hit. We actually eliminated our homeless czar position today. And so that's where we're at, though.
So you probably don't want to hear my suggestion that you start fining people for not wearing masks and use that money instead.
I would agree with you, Les.
Okay, Director Rogers.
I think that Greg answered my question. I'm just wondering about the future of the cooling center. Is there any plan on how that can get funded?
So I know that there's been conversations on, you know, CVAG applying for that, but the issue there is that when Roy's closed, the executive committee of CVAG did not want to be in the shelter business anymore. And that's what these are. So having that request come through CVAG will not be a reality. With that being said, I could work with, say, Pastor Kepion Shepherd in DHS, and we could approach the district. I could work with whether it's the city in Cathedral City or whoever operates the facility that they have to approach that. The funding for Palm Springs is being covered by originally FEMA dollars, but now it's all CARES Act dollars. So that funding is all set in place.
Okay, directors. Director Rogers, did you have a follow-up question, or are you okay?
Yes. So you're saying that there may be a possibility that you could work with Reverend Shepherd in Desert Hot Springs and people in Cathedral City to bring forth a proposal to the district?
Yeah, I can, and I'm willing to do that. I think, Carol, what I'm trying to be mindful of is, and as we noticed earlier in the amount of money that the district has given to homelessness, I don't want to sound cruel, but I think we really have to look at how we're allocating resources for long-term solutions to this. And, you know, while it's a very needed service, it's extremely expensive. But if you would like me, if you give me the direction, I'm happy to come to the program committee and do that.
Okay. Thank you. Director Zendel first and then Director Shore.
So Greg, how much money would be needed to open the cooling centers for the summer, the end of September.
Les, you're going to test my memory.
Well, you can't ask for money unless you know how much you need.
Okay, I do. I just don't have the budget sitting in front of me.
Greg, you were estimating about $90,000 a center.
Say it again, please.
Yes.
You're estimating about $90,000 a center.
$90,000.
Yeah.
$80,000. Okay. First, Director Zendo, and then I'll go to Director Shore.
So $90,000 for the two centers that aren't going to be open, or for three centers?
Each center.
I didn't hear
for
you.
Each. I'm going to try and find this.
I think it's each center, $30,000 a month.
Yes.
Center.
Okay, but I thought the Palm Springs one is funded.
Yes, the Palm Springs one is funded.
So you need $180,000 to open the Desert Hot Springs and the Cathedral City overnight cooling centers for the rest of the summer. Is that correct?
I'm trying to locate it, Les. Sorry.
Keep looking. I'll come back to you in a minute, Greg. First, I'll go to our attorney, and then I'm going to go to Director Shore. I have not forgotten you, Director Shore. Go ahead, Jeff.
I was just going to say, could I suggest that we just follow the grant process, come to staff with a proposal, rather than, you know, doing it here? I think it's better to follow AB 2019 that way.
And okay. So I think the direction is that Greg and Donna will talk more and then come back with some more information to the board for consideration. Director Shore, do you have any questions or comments?
Greg, I just had a quick question. Are there any religious facilities in the Valley that can offer a portion of their campus, if you will, their air-conditioned campus for use under such emergency circumstances, or is that outside the parameters of the program?
No, absolutely not, Director Shore. And in fact, we would be utilizing that type of facility in Desert Hot Springs. And last year, actually, we utilized that type of facility in Cathedral City. The one in Cathedral City, though, we ran into some issues with the neighborhood concerns and just the location of it. But no, and that's what we are pursuing. What we're finding, though, is a lot of them, it's a space issue, especially with social distancing. So to answer your question, yes. And I am pursuing that.
Thank you.
If I can add one thing, President Dallara, I'm sorry. And the reason for the delay in approaching the district over the funding was, and as I think I had mentioned probably the last meeting, is we were given the impression that we were able to fund the other two centers through CARES Act funding. But that ended up not being the case, because CARES Act funding, it was basically for filling for services that were affected by COVID-19. So that's the only reason we were able to do Palm Springs. So.
Director Zendel.
I understand what Jeff said, but I think the board can be somewhat directing of staff. And I would hope, and I have to hear from other people, is if we could direct staff to move on this with the various people that need to be moved on it, to run it by the program committee if necessary, but to fast track it. Because it is, you know, the almost the end of June. And I really don't want to wait until the end of July after the program committee has a way of working on this and then bring it back. So I think if they worked on it, it could be brought back sooner at a special meeting if indeed there is a proposal that you wanted to bring forward. So I'd like to direct staff to work on it. That's what
I believe that because of the urgency, that it is that time of the year, even though I would have liked to have avoided having to do this in an emergency, but the weather is not going to get any better. So yes, I think that is a good idea, Director Zendo, that we direct our staff to work with Greg to take it to the program committee. And if necessary, if it's determined that the board needs to meet on a special meeting, then they can contact us and make sure that we can notice that meeting appropriately. Is that okay? Okay. And Director Rogers, I see your hand. Yes, please.
I just wanted to say that it would be possible to have a special meeting of the program committee just to review this proposal.
Yes, that would be the plan, that you would have a special program meeting, and then we would then have possibly a special board meeting to act and not wait until the end of July. I understood the comment about the CARES money not being available, Greg, because it's not, the situation is not being impacted by COVID. But it seems like if that's not really a clear-cut description, because I think it's made a lot worse because of the social distancing requirements that you're not able to look at some sites that might be available. So isn't there, I'm just asking the question but not really expecting an answer, that maybe there's some way that that could be explored a little bit, especially with the new funding that the county just approved, the $5 million countywide for nonprofits that have been impacted by COVID. If there's possibility that a nonprofit could step forward and maybe the rescue mission ask for some money to be able to put towards this cause, just for an FYI, but I'll let you move that forward. Since this is an information item, I don't want to take more time than that. We will move on to the next item, which is the Behavioral Health Initiative. And I will turn to our Senior Program Officer for an update.
I don't really have an update on anything about Behavioral Health Initiative, except that we are going to be working on that the position for the officer's position, she was declined it, so we will be opening that back up.
Thank you very much for your brief report. Okay, so is there any comment or a question from the board before we move towards adjournment? Seeing none, I will adjourn the meeting at 7:25. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Take care. Be safe.
Thank you.